Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osband, here with my friend, Chavruta Aaron Gordon. Our daf today, Masecha Bava Kamma, daf Kuf Yud Zayin, page 117. We have 3 days left of Bava Kamma, hard to believe. Please look at our Facebook page, our WhatsApp group, or you can email us at talkingtalmud@gmail.com to get information about our Siyum, which, God willing, will take place on March 3rd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Israel time. We have Rabbanit Aliza Sperling as our guest speaker, and we look forward to finishing Masechet Bava Kamma with you. On this staff, we have actually finally a lot of stories. In other words, case reports of different things that happen and how the rabbis ruled on them. And particularly, one of the things that they're looking at is the question of Moser, which is essentially a Jew who sort of cooperates or, you know, sort of turns in another Jew to the authorities. And we see from the stories that are presented here that this was an issue during Talmudic times, particularly in the times of the Amoraim, where, you know, the government would come to you, or an officer of the government would come to you and demand an item that belonged to another Jew. And so the question in many of these cases becomes, if you gave that object over, would you be obligated? Is that person obligated to repay back the object that they used or that they gave to the authorities? Or do we say that it was done under duress and therefore they don't need to repay it? Embedded in here is actually a very lengthy story that involves Rav Kahana that I think is a great piece here that we should read together that I'm going to review. And, you know, just a couple things. We haven't really ever done, I think, a who's who on Rav Kahana, or maybe we haven't. We just haven't done it for a long time. So there are a few Rav Kahanas. There isn't just one. This Rav Kahana is sometimes referred to as Rav Kahana Hasheni, but he's a student of Rav. And there's actually some traditions that actually state that Rav Kahana was a stepson of Rav from Rav's second wife. We've seen other stories with Rav Kahana and Rav before. There was that very famous story about them in Brachot on page 62, where Rav was actually engaged in sexual relations with his wife and Rav Kahana was underneath the bed, and Rav gets very upset with him. Rav Kahana says, well, this is also Torah and I need to learn it. So we know that they had a very close relationship, and that's going to actually be important for understanding this story that happens. So the story starts as follows. Sahu gavra dehavi bay achuve ativna dechavre. So there was a certain person who wanted to show somebody else's straw to the officers of the king. Ata lekame de Rav. So he comes to Rav, Amarle, and Rav says to him, lo techave, lo techave. Do not show it, do not show it. In other words, even though you're being requested, or maybe you think it's a good idea to show this person's straw to the authorities, you should not do it. Amarle, he says to Rav, Mechavina u Mechavina, I will show it, I will show it. In other words, he says, I'm not going to listen to what you said, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to show it. Yativ Rav Kahana kame de Rav. So Rav Kahana was sitting with Rav. Shmate le kuye mine, right? And so he heard what this person said he was going to do, that basically he's going to go ahead and show the straw anyways, right? He's going to cooperate with the authorities. And so he dislocated his neck from his place. In other words, he kills the person. He kills the potential informer and he breaks his neck. Now, first of all, I think this tells us something about how serious it was basically considered to be an informer, right? That he basically, you know, Rav Kahana felt that he actually had to go and hurt him in this way. Kari Rav Ilve. So Rav basically said that this following pasuk, and this is a pasuk from Yeshayahu chapter 51, verse 20, applied to Rav Kahana. Banayach ufu shachvu berosh kol chutzot kito michmar. Your children have fainted. They lie fallen at the head of every street, like a wild ox trapped in a net. So in other words, what the pasuk is saying is that Jews who are under the authority of non-Jews are like a trapped ox. Matoza kevin shenafal ba michmar ein merachmin alav. Just as this wild ox, once it falls into the net, they have no pity on it. Af mamon she Yisrael kevin shenafal biyado de kochavin ein merachim alav. So too, when the money of a Jew, once it falls into the hands of the Ovdei Kochavim, into the idolaters, they have no pity on him. And they'll even come to kill a Jew for his money. So the idea is that informing leads to killing, right? People will be killed to get that money. And so Rav Kahana, you did the right thing by killing this would-be informer. You did the right thing. Now, you know, you could, a lot of the Mefarshim, you know, talk about how did he know he was going to inform? Maybe he was just saying he would, but he didn't actually do it. Again, things that we don't necessarily have time to do when we're doing this as Daf Yomi, but a question to think about. Amar Le Rav. So then Rav says to Rav Kahana, Kahana ad ha'adina ha'parse. Kahana, until now, those in power were the Persians. Delo kapte ashrifut damim. And they weren't concerned with murder, right? In other words, the Persians wouldn't have killed that you killed this guy. Vahashta ika yivane. But now, those who are in power, the authorities, are the Greeks. To keep the kaptu ashrifut damim. And they are concerned with murder. Vimi miradim miradin. And they will say murder, murder. So in other words, he's saying before, you wouldn't have gotten in trouble. Now you're going to get in trouble, right? Kum sel Arya d'Israel, go up and go to Eretz Yisrael. V'kaba alayich d'lo takshi l'Rabbi Yochanan shvash shinin. And what he basically is telling him to do is he's going to go study with Rabbi Yochanan. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan is the first generation Amora of Eretz Yisrael. Rav was actually his student, and Rav came to Bavel. And so he tells him, you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. You're going to study with Rabbi Yochanan. But you should not ask any questions for 31 years. The Mefarshim want to explain why is it that he was not allowed to ask any questions. Some say that this was actually sort of like a type of, you know, atonement he had to do for killing this person. Other people say that what's the sin that he did is that he made a ruling in front of his teacher. In other words, Rav didn't tell him to go ahead and kill this guy, but Rav Kahana went ahead and he killed this guy. So, you know, maybe that's why he needed to be quiet for 7 years, because he sort of, you know, didn't ask his teacher what to do. He didn't ask Rav what to do, and he acted instead. A third option that some of the Mefarshim present is that the idea is that he's supposed to, he shouldn't ask any questions because he needs to sort of get used to or acclimate himself to the learning of Eretz Yisrael. Azil ishkechei l'reish lakish diyati v'kam esayim mitvata diyoma l'rabanan. So he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he gets to the, you know, to Rabbi Yochanan, and he finds Reish Lakish, who remember is Rabbi Yochanan's bar palukta, right? Rabbi Yochanan's chavruta very often, right? They're sitting and reviewing. And Reish Lakish is reviewing, you know, what Rabbi Yochanan taught with all of the rabbis. Amar Lehu. So after hearing this, Rav Kahana says to the students, Reish Lakish hacha, where's Reish Lakish? Amrulay, they said to him, Amai, why do you ask? Amrulay, he says to them, Hai kushia, v'hai kushia, v'hai peruka, v'hai peruka. I have this difficulty and that difficulty, and I have this answer and I have that answer, right? And so he basically wanted to go and he wanted to discuss all these things with him. Amrulay l'Reish Lakish, so they told Reish Lakish what Rav Kahana said. Also Reish Lakish, Amrulay l'Rabbi Yochanan, so Reish Lakish went and he said to Rabbi Yochanan, Ari alami bavel la'ayen mar, B'mitvata d'mlemachar. A lion has ascended from Bavel. Let the master, right, scrutinize him, right? And he will say in tomorrow's lecture in the academy. So, you know, in other words, make sure you're really prepped for tomorrow's lecture because this Ari, this lion has come. L'machar utuvia bidara kama kame de Rabbi Yochanan. The next day they sat Rav Kahana in the front row in front of Rabbi Yochanan. And this was basically a way of giving him like some kavod, to give him some honor. Amar shmatata v'lo akshay. Rabbi Yochanan teaches his lecture and Rav Kahana doesn't say anything. He doesn't raise any questions. Shmata v'lo akshay. Again, he teaches another class and Rav Kahana doesn't raise any difficulties. Anachte achuri shvadari. So therefore, they put Rabbi Yochanan 7 rows back, right? Because in a way, it like wasn't respectful. You're supposed to be engaging. And here he was. He didn't ask any questions. Ad yutfei bedara batra. So he's sitting in the back row. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan le Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, that's Reish Lakish, Arisha marta naseh shu'al. The lion which you spoke of has actually become to be he's a fox. In other words, he wasn't that impressive. Amar. So hearing this, Rav Kahana says to himself, Yehei Rava Dahana Shva Dari Lahavu Chilu Shva Shinin De Amar Li Rav. So it should be that these seven rows, right, that he's dishonored with, that he had to go back for seven rows, right? This should be like, should take the place of the 7 years which Rav spoke to me about. So in other words, him having to move back seven rows is equal to him not being able to ask questions or having to be quiet for the 7 years like Rav told him to. Come Achri, so he got up to his feet. Amarle says to Rabbi Yochanan, Nehadar mar beresha, let the master repeat the lecture from the beginning. Amar shmatata v'akshe. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, what he wanted to teach. And Rav Kahana raises a difficulty. Ukame bedara kame. So then they put Rav Kahana in the first row. Amar shmatata v'akshe. And then Rabbi Yochanan says another, you know, discourse. And again, Rav Kahana raises a difficulty. Rabbi Yochanan have yativ ashva b'sitarke. So Rabbi Yochanan was sitting upon seven rugs. Shalfei lechada b'sitraka mitute. And what they did was they removed one rug from beneath him. Okay. And the reason for this is because, right, they sort of, to show that maybe I embarrassed Rav Kahana before. So this was a symbolic. Amar shmatata v'akshele. So again, Rabbi Yochanan teaches again. And again, Rav Kahana raises a difficulty. Right? And so again, they're going to remove a rug. Ad de shalfei le kule bisartarke mitute ad yate va'arya. And this goes on until they remove all the rugs below Rabbi Yochanan. So in other words, every time that he gives a class, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav Kahana raises these good questions, they remove a rug sort of as a sign of respect to Rav Kahana. So Rabbi Yochanan sort of gets lowered down and becomes equal with Rav Kahana. Rabbi Yochanan Gavra Sava Have. So Rabbi Yochanan was an elderly man. Umasriche Givine. And his eyebrows were hanging low over his eyes, so he couldn't actually see Rav Kahana. Amar Luhu, he says to his student, Deluli Einai v'achaze, says, uncover my eyes so I can see him. Dalule b'michalta de Kaspa. So they lifted his eyebrows with him with like a silver eye, with a silver eye applicator. It's some kind of thin spoon that was used to apply medicine to the eye. And so they used it to sort of prop his eyelids up. Chaza de parte shivate. So we saw that Rav Kahana's lips were split. And so the question is, what does that mean exactly? So the Mefarshim explained maybe it was that he got into a fight or something like that. Savar achuch kamachech be, and he thought Rav Kahana was smirking at him. Chalashta te v'nachnafshe. So Rav Yochanan got upset, and what happened? Rav Kahana dies. Now this is very, very interesting that Rav Kahana dies. First of all, the Mefarshim want to explain why is it that he deserves to die, right? Should he have deserved to die? But this also should remind you of the story of, you know, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, where remember, they also got into a fight. Rabbi Yochanan didn't like how Reish Lakish was speaking to him. And it's interesting that Reish Lakish is in this story, so that this obviously took place before that actually happened. And we know that what happened in the end is that Reish Lakish, you know, he basically gets upset, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish ends up dying, basically. So this is not the first story that we see. And that's actually, it's a Gemara that we'll see this a little bit more. It'll come up in Bava Metziah. But this is not the first time that we've seen that Rabbi Yochanan sort of, you know, gets upset and kind of causes somebody to die, like because he's so upset. So I just think that that's, you know, also something that's interesting to think about and to pay attention to, that there sort of is, I don't know, to me at least, there seems to be a little bit of a theme here. But we're going to see that Gemara in Bava Metziah, so we haven't learned it yet, but that Gemara is going to come up in Bava Metziah. So he dies. All right. Lamacha armalei l'Rabbi Yochanan l'Rabbanan. The next day, Rabbi Yochanan says to the rabbis, Chazitu levavale hecha avi. Do you see what that Babylonian did? Right? In other words, like, do you see that Babylonian mocked me? Amrulei. They said to Rav Kahana, Darche hachi. That was his usual appearance. He wasn't mocking you. Alagabe ma'arta. So when he heard this, Rabbi Yochanan goes to the cave, basically where Rav Kahana was buried. Chaza dehave. And he saw that what was there? Hadra le achna. There was a serpent with its, encircling the opening of the cave. In other words, he couldn't actually get in. There was a snake that was there. Amar le, Rabbi Yochanan says to the serpent, achna, achna, betach pumayach v'yiknas harav etzel tamid. Serpent, serpent, open your mouth and let the teacher go to the student. V'lo patach, and the serpent did not open its mouth. Rabbi Yochanan says, yikanes chaver etzel chaver. Let the colleague go in to see the colleague. In other words, he sort of lessens his prestige here, and he says, like, you know, this is a colleague-to-colleague issue. V'lo patach, and again, it didn't open. Yikanes tamid etzel harav. Let the student go in to see his teacher. So in other words, now he's describing Rav Kahana as being his superior, patachle. And with that, the serpent opened his mouth and allowed him to go in. Bai rachme v'ukame. When he got into the cave, he prayed for mercy, and he raised Rav Kahana up. Okay, in other words, he resurrected Rav Kahana. Please pay attention to what this Gemara is saying. Amar le, and he says to Rav Kahana, I have yadana de darche demar hacha lo chalshe date. If I had known that this was the master's usual appearance, I would not have become upset. Hashta leite mar bahadran. Right, now let the master come back with me, right? Why don't you come back with me, to the academy? You should come back with me to the yeshiva. Amar le, Rav Kahana said to him, I matzat l'mavai rachme detu lo shichvina azlina. If you are able to pray for mercy that I should not die again, I will go with you back to the yeshiva. V'i lo lo azlina. But if not, I will not go. So in other words, Rav Kahana is worried that Rabbi Yochanan will get upset again and will cause him to die again. So he basically says, you have to guarantee that I'm not going, then I'm not going to die again. Choil v'chalif shata chalif chalif. So since the time of my death has passed, it is past. In other words, I don't want to be alive again. I don't want to risk dying again, which I find to be like a very, very, powerful thing, right? Or what he could be saying here is that basically, like, I miraculously sort of was saved, was passed from death once. I'm not going to be passed from it again. Trie ukame, Rabbi Yochanan woke him from sleep and raised him. In other words, he fully came to life. Shalye kol sveka dehave le upashtinhu nihale. He then asked Rav Kahana to resolve all his Torah questions, and Rav Kahana resolved all of them. Now, I always have a question on this piece, if that is, was he able, did he have some access to some type of Torah learning because he had come back from the dead? Hainu d'amar Rabbi Yochanan d'luchun amar imri d'luchun hi. And this shows Rav Kahana's great Torah knowledge, right, is why Rabbi Yochanan said to his students from Eretz Yisrael, I said that the Torah is yours, right, but it's actually theirs. So what's also meaning, Rabbi Yochanan saying, I often said that the Torah is yours, meaning yours, from you from Eretz Yisrael, right? But actually it is theirs, meaning it is really theirs, the ones from Babel. So the other piece that's very interesting about this story is that we know that there always is sort of this rivalry between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. And this story here is sort of brought to basically reflect that, that somehow Babel was actually greater. There's a lot of different ways to read the story. I don't have time to go through it. You'll see many other shiurim papers, that happen here. One question that is, on this particular story, just to go back to the Reish Lakish, I've even seen people talk about, well, why didn't he raise Reish Lakish from the dead? Why did he only raise Rav Kahana from the dead? So, it's a very, very interesting story. I thought it was important that we pay attention to it and read it here.
I'm not sure what to make of this resurrection story. It seems like there's some kind of magic, something going on. And it seems that this was, doable, possible, or unbelievable, but yet it happened anyway kind of thing back in that day. I don't know if this is, you know, I don't know what to make of it. On the shot of it, in the plain sense of it, it really does seem that there's a resurrection here. And as you said, Yordana, that he comes back maybe with some extra knowledge of Torah even. And yet it's kind of hard to wrap my mind around that, right? And it's a little reminiscent to me of the story of Rabbi Zeira, right? This is in Masachah Megillah, on when it was Purim, and, you know, they have a Suda, and then the next day he wakes up dead, and that's, you know, but then he comes back. And so is that resurrection, or is that he was, you know, very inebriated? And then the next year, but it seems that it's more serious than that, because the next year he refuses to drink again in the same way with the same people, because he doesn't want to rely on a miracle that he'll come back again. So maybe this is something that was a spiritual and physical possibility in the ancient world, and we don't know what to make of it nowadays. I don't know. I don't know. We definitely see people who we think are on their last legs make recoveries. I'm going to leave it there. It's an open question for me. I don't have much more to say about that. I do want to come back, you know, after all the stories, and I know this is a long episode, but it's a very rich stuff. I suppose it's everybody, you know, getting stuff in at the end of Baba Kama, except for that it's also part of Nezikin. We're only a third of the way, or nearly a third of the way through. We have another 20 chapters of Nezikin in Baba Metzia and Baba Batra. In any case, I'm coming back to the case of what happens when you have an informant. On Amud Bet, towards the end, meaning there's a mission at the very end before that. How da achve am mataksa to Rabbi Abba, right? So we have a case of a person who shows Rabbi Abba's silk, whatever this item is, and he shows it to the non-Jews, and then they come and they take it. Yativ Rabbi Abbao, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzchak, Nafcha, Yativ Rabbi Lezer Gabayhu. So all these rabbis were sitting together to determine whether Rabbi Abba was entitled to get compensation from the person who informed on him. It's interesting to me that they don't name that person, right? The person who ratted out the fact that he had this item, this silk. And Rabbi Eli sat with them. And then the judges, right, they're all functioning here in the capacity of judges. Savor lechiyuvei mahadzitznan dan et adin zika et achayav vechiyev et azakai. So what happens is they say the informer should reimburse Rabbi Abba, right? And there's a whole citation going to Masecha Bechorot, where if a judge issues a judgment, makes an error, then what happens is he acquits the person who in fact was liable, or says that the person is liable who in fact should have been acquitted, rendered that which was pure, impure, or purified, or, you know, established as pure that which was not pure. The rule is that the judge has to pay the compensation, and the judgment stands, which is an interesting authority given to the fact that they've made this judgment, and now they'll carry on from there instead of going back to undo it. And so Rav Eli, remember, he was sitting amongst them, right? He says, this is what Rav said. That Mishnah was talking about not just a ruling, but where there was actual monetary switching, right? Somebody actually paid back, and now the judge has to pay out of pocket. Okay, and this goes on to figure out, you know, again, specifically the liability, which makes perfect sense in the context of the rest of Baba Kama. What happens next, though, is more other cases of this kind when somebody's property is taken or is lost because of informant or that kind of thing. The next one, Gavra to have a mafkile kasa to kaspa, a certain person, and it's always a certain person, they're not named the bad guys of these stories, has a silver cup that he's supposed to be watching. But then Silke Gnave Ilave, thieves come to the home, he gives them the cup, right? The guardian of this cup gives it to them. And then, of course, the case comes before Rabbah. And Rabbah says, you don't have to pay. Meaning, even though, and Abai says, Rabbah says, you don't have to pay. And Abai says, one second, He's saved himself with another person's property. Of course he should be liable. And so this comes back to all kinds of issues that we've talked about throughout this masachet in terms of how do you determine when one must pay? Because what happens is that Rav Ashi has a different solution. Ela amar Rav Ashi chazenan iinish amidhu adate didei atu veilo adate dekaspa atu. Rav Ashi says, well, let's go look at what Rabbah had to say. Rabbah said, I want to be clear, it's Rabbah. I think I said Rava once. It's not, it's Rabbah. Rabbah said that he doesn't have to pay. Let's look at the standing, the financial standing of the guardian who gave over this silver cup to save himself, right? They come to steal all of his stuff. He gives this over, but he's saving himself from greater financial loss by handing that over. That's a very different scenario than if he had been a poor person and they came specifically for that silver cup, which he's not saving himself at all. It's all he's got to give. And so then the judgment is going to be different. And I think we come back to this idea that the sages could be careful in applying halacha to determine how much loss, how much hardship is the judgment going to bring upon the person they're judging. Another case, and then we'll come to the Mishnah. How gavra, again, no name. How gavra da hava mafkid gabe arnaka de pidyon shvuim. A certain man had the collection, the community's purse, basically, with the funds that were collected for pidyon shvuim, for redeeming captives. Thieves came, took the purse, he gives it to them, right? And then this same case comes before, this time it is Rava. And Rava says to him, Patre, meaning he's exempting him from payment. And Abaye says, again, it seems to be, it's interesting that the first case is Rava, which is the previous generation, now Rava, Amar Le Abaye, because Abaye is in both cases. He again, he saved himself for the property of others. In this case, it's really communal property. And Rava says, you don't have a greater pidyon shvuim. You don't have a greater case of redeeming captives than preventing yourself from having been abducted or in this case, you know, maybe he would have been harmed or killed or who knows for the sake of taking that, taking those funds. There are more cases here. You know, it carries right through to the Mishnah, each one, another case with different nuances, but the nuances are not established. They're not really fleshed out in the Gemara itself. The Gemara leaves that to we who come to study and the commentaries. Very quickly, the Mishnah, then we'll close. Shtafat Nahar, a river overflows. It floods into a field, right? And now the question is, if you're the owner of the field, what happened to your field? Omer lo, harei shalcha lefanecha. So the claim here, according to the Mishnah, is that a robber of this field can say to the owner of the field, harei shalcha lefanecha, this is what's before you. You get it back, no extra compensation, because the river, you know, an act of God, so to speak, took care of the damage. It's not on the robber to replace it, because he's not the one causing the damage, even though the damage took place while it was under his auspices. What it means to steal a field is already complicated, of course. So then the Gemara quickly addresses this. I mean, it doesn't do it quickly. We're going to do it quickly. Tad Rabbanan, Hagozel Sadeh Mechavero Vishatfat Nahar, Ushtafat Nahar. Somebody who steals a field from his neighbor, from his friend, and the river overflows. Chayav la'amid lo sadeh acher. So this claim, this position says, he has to actually replace it with a different field. He should give the owner of the field a different one, the original owner. Divrei Rabbi Elazar, that's Rabbi Elazar's position. For Chachamim Omrim, Omer lo harei shalcha lefanecha. And the rabbis, the majority opinion says, no, he could say that which is before you is yours. And the discussion of where this comes in is you know, part of it is exactly dependent on this question of how much responsibility does somebody who has stolen something have to be able to return that thing when the damage that may have happened is really kind of beyond his control. That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcast. Come talk to us on our Facebook page and tell us what you think of this DAF. Thank you to Rebbe Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. And until tomorrow, go and learn.